Okay, we're moving forward in Jewish history. We're up to the year 3142. And now he gives us an overview. He says, if you do a careful analysis of the 12 short prophets, Hoshea, Yoel, Amos, Obadiah, Yonah, Micha, Nahum, Habakkuk, Zephaniah, Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi, you will see that they span in Jewish history from Uzziah, the Judean king, Uzziah, the son of Amaziah, right, the period of Yeshaya, Isaiah, till Alexander of Macedon, Alexander the Great. He says, if you pay careful attention. Now, that gives us a tremendous insight, because Alexander of Macedon ascended upon Jerusalem in the beginning of the period of the Second Temple. But he ascended when the high priest, the Kohen Gadol, was Shimon HaTzadik, the end of the men of the Great Assembly. Now, our sages tell us, as we discussed earlier tonight, that among the men of the great assembly, you had prophets. But I always wondered, how long did the prophets stay alive for? And you had Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi. You had three prophets who were part of the men of the great assembly. Were they around at the end of the period of the men of the great assembly? According to what he's saying, they were. Because he's saying, these three prophets, Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi, the concluding prophets of the 12 short prophets, were around till the period of Alexander of Macedon. Alexander the Great, Alexander of Macedon, was in fact during the period of Shimon HaTzadik. Shimon HaTzadik was already in the Mishnah. Shimon HaTzadik was the high priest after Ezra the scribe. Why is he called Ezra Sofer, by the way? Because the rabbis in that time were called Sofer. The name Sofer means counter. The rabbis used to know, you could ask them 1,365. And the rabbi would answer you which word that is in Torah. They knew the words, they knew the letters, they knew the mitzvot, down to numbers. They could put the whole Torah down in numbers. It was a special type of genius. So that's why they were called soferim, counters. They knew how to, they knew the full count of the Torah. So it's like a person once wanted to check a rabbi. So he asked him, what number are you up to? He wanted to know what number blessing. You're supposed to make 100 blessings a day. So he met him in the middle of the day. He said, what number are you up to? Right? Because theoretically, you should have a count. You should know. Did you get your 100 in today or not? Right? Shimon HaTzadik, that's the famous story that's recorded in numerous places. It's recorded in Talmud as well. That when Alexander ascended upon Jerusalem, the Samaritans had convinced him that the Jews were plotting a rebellion against him. He was en route to war. He wasn't en route to Jerusalem. But he led his army up to Jerusalem. And as he approached Jerusalem, Shimon HaTzadik went out in the garb of the Kohen Gadol, which the Sephorno explains the garb of the Kohen Gadol was the royal garb of the day. Meaning what we know, the Kohen Gadol, the breastplate and everything else, that's the way kings dressed. The Kohen Gadol had the highest form of that. His was the purest blue, the purest wool, the purest linen, the purest gold, so it radiated. But the manner of dress, everything we read about the Kohen Gadol, that's the way kings dressed in the days of Tanakh. So Shimon HaTzadik comes out to greet Alexander. And as he approaches Alexander, Alexander gets off his horse and bows to Shimon. And his servants ask him, what are you doing? And he says, every time before I go to war, I have a dream. And in my dream, an angel shows up to me dressed just like this man. He looks just like him. And he tells me, I'm going to succeed. So this is an angel I'm seeing here. So that's the story. Then Alexander helped us with our fight against the Samaritans. Instead of destroying the temple, he fortified the Jews in the temple. That's the story of Alexander. We see Alexander met with Shimon HaTzadik. Shimon HaTzadik, Shimon the Pious, was the end of the period of the men of the Great Assembly. According to what we just learned, that means the prophets, Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi, had a very long life. They lived to the end of that period. Now, he says the period from Uzziah the king through Alexander is 327 years. So Uzziah... Well, we don't have the 12 short prophets yet. In the time of Uzziah, you have Hoshea, Yoel, you have Amos. And only later on do Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi come to the scene. So, if we were to take 327, we have to calculate how many years to the destruction. That'll be another approximately 100 years. And then you have 70 years in exile. So you're talking about 150 years into the Second Temple period, approximately, give or take. We're still going to discuss that. You guys raised Koresh. We once had a class on this. The questions we have on the Jewish calendar from the Persian calendar, perhaps we'll revisit that when we get there in our Jewish history class. So That's an overview of the 12 short prophets, that they're going to span 327 years. See if you could remember that. I won't. But if you help me, if you remember it, so we'll bear that in mind as we progress. Yes?
How could Obadiah be, during the time of the 12 prophets, of the post Amatziah, when we know there was a Nabi called Obadiah from the time of, there was a Nabi Obadiah and during the time of Achab and Isabel?
I agree. I don't think we have to say that all 12 lived then. You're right. Ovadia might have been earlier. Yoel might have been earlier. There's an opinion that Yoel is from the period of Shmuel. We're not sure when Yoel prophesied, even though we learned not that way. We learned the Talmud in Tractate Tanis a few weeks ago. We learned that whole piece that Yoel was in the period of the end of the first temple. But okay, you're right. And it means the general period of the 12 prophets. Not there were exceptions, it would seem. Right. Yeah.
Is that book quotes that Obadiah died in the times of Elisha?
Fine. Okay. So okay. So there you have it. Yeah. He's saying, I didn't remember that earlier we read that Obadiah already died. So that's a good point. Yeah.
One of the things that I remember when I was in Yeshiva 2 years ago, that I first learned about the books called the Apocrypha, the books that are Suffolk, part of Tanakh, Suffolk, not.
No such thing.
Ben Sera and
I heard you and I answered you. There's no book that we have a doubt about whether they're in Tanakh. That's not true. And if you want, we can have a class about it.
They're not part of the Tanakh, but they were supposedly at one point Sefer Kodesh, although because we did not canon.
So I said not. You want to say yes? You could say yes. I'm telling you that in the Talmud and in the Mishnah, it says not that way. The Christians say what you just said. The Talmud and the Mishnah says not that way. And the reason the Christians were so interested in having the Apocrypha be recognized as part of the Tanakh was because they wanted to insist that prophecy continued throughout the period of the Second Temple so that they can claim that their man also was a prophet. But in Jewish texts, if you go in the Talmud and Tractate Megillah, and the Talmud and Tractate Sanhedrin, and the Talmud and Tractate Sota, and the Mishnah and Tractate Yadayim, and more, it says very clearly that they were not a part of the Talmud. I'm saying that's not accurate. The fact that the Christians wanted to call it a part of the Tanakh, that's true. The fact that there were many people who challenged our tradition who wanted to call it a part of the Tanakh, that's true. But to say that the Jewish people had a doubt and it was once, that's not true.
Okay.
Again, you can check early texts of Chazal and see that Chazal were very clear where Tanakh ended, etc. Yes?
I don't remember.
Okay.
Is there any scriptural in Tanakh evidence saying that prophecy ended with the last three prophets?
That's a good question.
Doesn't the last verse of Malachi imply?
Yeah, sounds like.
If you want to, you could say that. I want to look it up. I want to see if the Talmud quotes a pasuk when the Talmud says it. If you want to wait, we could look it up now. But it's not our topic. We're a little off topic. I do not know right now. But if you remind me, B'ezrat Hashem will look for it. Okay. Okay, back to where we are. So we're up to the year 3153. In Israel, in the northern 10 tribes, we have Zechariah, the son of Yeravam, who is king. He's going to be king for all of 6 months. And at that time, we have things are starting to happen politically around the world. So in Rome, there was a king, I don't know how to pronounce the name, Auliu. He excommunicated, he banished his brother, his big brother, and his nephew, he forced her to go to some kind of convent and lead a secluded life, and it backfired. She went and became a woman of ill repute, and she gave birth to people who would later on be active in Roman politics, Rumus and Romulus. And when the king, Auliu, heard that that's what happened, he ordered that she be executed and her children thrown into the river. But the messenger felt bad, so he left them both by the river edge. He didn't kill them. When they grew up, they went and led a rebellion against their uncle and overtook the Roman kingdom, these children. They heard that the Roman king had wanted them dead. There's a medrash that says that it's about them that King David said the verse, Yatom ata ayita ozer. You help the orphan, means even the Roman orphan who was born by a woman of ill repute that the Roman emperor wanted to kill him. So even him, Hashem helped him out. In the 11th year of Chizkiyahu's reign, that's when Rumus and Romulus, they surrounded the city of Rome. There is a medrash that says that the messenger killed the mother and left the two children. And a female wolf came and nursed the children, and they grew up from that female wolf. Yeah.
So no wonder. So the
that's the actual story of what the Romans say how their civilization started.
That's the whole legend of how.
Okay.
That is literally Romulus and Remus. They said they were raised by wolves. This is like exactly it.
So it's quoted in the Sefer Yuchsin. It's quoted in ancient texts. Where the Romans got it from, I don't know. I mean, maybe our books got it from them. I don't know. I don't know.
No, because there's a little bit of variation.
What's the date of the story?
We have to check when the Yuchsin was written. I don't know.
Who wrote Sefer Yuchsin?
I don't know. You guys have your smartphones. You could check. I don't know. I don't know.
We got no smartphones.
Okay, I don't know. Sefer Yuchsin. What?
Yeah, right.
No, the current show, we're making a video about it. Rambam pretty much accepts the Quran view about Muhammad.
What?
Rambam essentially accepts the Quran story about Muhammad almost verbatim.
Where do you see that?
In Gilat Iman.
I don't.
No, it is.
Let's
crazy.
Look at it together.
He calls him a Shabbat, but in terms of like the fucking how his last story, he more or less accepts the basic.
Show me. I didn't understand that Nigerte man, but show me. Others say that the word ze'evit in their language could mean either a woman of ill repute. In that dialect, it could mean a woman of ill repute or a female wolf. And that the one who picked up the children was not a female wolf, but that they chose to take that interpretation of the word. That the word of the person who nursed and brought up the children in Roman, I don't know which word, he doesn't tell us the word. He says it's a word that means both a female wolf and a woman of ill repute. And so others say that the story was not that a female wolf took these two children, but rather a woman of ill repute. They were the ones who led the rebellion and overtaking of Rome until Romulus murdered his brother and took the throne for himself. So that's the beginning of what we're still going to see evolve in the Roman Empire. We move forward we're in the year 3154, and Shalum ben Yavesh assassinates the king Zechariah, after we said Zechariah was king for all of 6 months. And Shalum ben Yavesh is going to be king for 1 month. And here, the northern 10 tribes are going into turmoil. The kingdoms don't last too long. You're having assassination after assassination. And so, long after, yeah. We're towards the end now.
Oh, you're right. Second.
So, yes, this is the second year of him. So, Menachem ben Gadi is going to be king for 10 years. And now we're up to the year 3160. Micha, the prophet, is going to accept his tradition from Yeshaya, the prophet. And he is going to overlap with Yotam, Ahaz, Yechizkiyahu, the Judean kings. So he overlaps with his Rebbe, Yeshaya. He and his Rebbe prophesied in the same time. Hosea, Amos, Yeshaya, Micha, all overlapped. Hosea, Amos, Yeshaya, Micha. They all overlapped. And Micha is buried in a city named Ksil. I don't know where that is.
That's terrible. Ksil usually is full, no?
Yeah, I don't know. Look at that. In the Assyrian Empire, we now have the king Tiglat-Pileser. We're up to the year 3163, and Ahaz is born. Now, Ahaz is going to be a very wicked king of the Jewish people. Well, we'll still get back to him. Next year, Pekahiah ben Menachem becomes the king over the northern 10 tribes. He's going to be king for 2 years. And then he is going to be assassinated by Pekah ben Remaliah, and he will take the throne from him. So again, we had Menachem ben Gadi king for 10 years, and then his son Pekahiah is already assassinated, and Pekah ben Remaliah takes the throne. He is going to be king for 20 years, and he is the second to last king over the northern 10 tribes. Hoshea ben Elah will assassinate him. But Pekah ben Remaliah will lead a war against Judea, and in one day he will kill 120,000 Jews. And he took 200,000 Jews into captivity into the northern 10 tribes. So this is one of the bloodiest days in Jewish history, when Pekah ben Remaliah attacked Judea, killed 120,000, and took another 200,000 into the northern 10 tribes into captivity. And that brings us to the year 3167, where going back to Judea now, we're shifting kings. The next king is Yotam. And Yotam is a pious king. His father, Uzziah, we know, entered the Holy of Holies, and that's when you had the terrible earthquake, etc. His son Yotam is pious. Yotam is all of 25 years old when he becomes king. And Yotam, there's a lot of questions how to factor the years there. I'm not going into that. Most of the prophets are talking to him, because Yeshaya is talking to the Judean king. His son Ahaz is going to be the wicked king, and that's 7 years later. Ahaz ben Yotam is born. He's going to be 11 years old when he has his son Chizkiyo. Ahaz will take the throne when he is all of 20 years old. Ahaz ben Yotam will take the throne. Now, Ahaz ben Yotam decided that he wants the Jewish people to leave their worship of Hashem. So he says, how do I do that? So Ahaz ben Yotam said, what's this similar to a pedagogue, a teacher who's responsible, a tutor, responsible for tutoring the king's son? And he says, if I kill the king's son, the king will come after me. So how can I get the king's son to die? And that's Ahaz's thought process. How do I get the Jews to leave God? And that's where we'll pick up Be'ezrat Hashem in a minute.